my mission in life as a professional is to raise women's voices. Hands down, I know it. It's clear. It's true. This is all I ever want is for women to get their stories down on the page, have their voice heard.
This is Heart of the Story, and I'm Nadine Kenny Johnstone. I'm an author and a holistic writing coach who talks with today's top women writers about how to navigate life when things don't go according to plan. These impactful conversations and personal reflections invite you to be seen, feel supported, and ultimately fall back in love with yourself. So let's go together to that honest, powerful place, the heart of the story.
Hi, friends. 2025 has been an incredible year for Heart of the Story. I think it's because the women writers that I interviewed this year really, really brought the magic. And I also think it doesn't hurt that several of them have books that landed on the bestseller list. Ooh, this was quite a year. And in order to celebrate that, today we're doing a best of 2025 episode where you're going to hear my favorite moments from the year that was. And I'm talking with my dear producer, Michelle Rado, about how these conversations have impacted me on a personal and creative level. You'll definitely want to listen to this one. And because this will be kicking off our holiday break, it'll give you the opportunity to catch up on any of the fabulous episodes you may have missed. We'll be returning back here in mid-January, and you will definitely want to follow, subscribe, favorite this podcast, whatever you want to do to make sure that it comes into your feed, because when I come back in mid-January for the next season, I have a big announcement, like big announcement. I can barely believe it. So you'll definitely want to come back for that one. And in the meantime, if you're wanting to have some support and inspiration for your creative writing and you want to hit the ground running in January, then I have two opportunities for you. One is that I'm leading a free class on January 15th. It's called Tiny True Stories, Write Your Micro Memoirs. I love teaching micro memoir because writing short pieces in 1,000 words or less is really accessible, whether you're wanting to just capture some memories on the page or you're wanting to publish a flash nonfiction piece in a major publication. This is a class for you. It's free. It's virtual. If you cannot make it, you can still register and you'll be sent the replay. So I'll put the link in the show notes, but you can also find out more at NadineKennyJohnstone.com. And the second opportunity is that my fan favorite 6-week class called Publish the Personal starts back up on January 23rd. It always sells out and it's almost full. And in this class, you will get the opportunity to write, workshop, revise, and submit 2 personal essays for publication. The previous students in this class have had huge success getting their pieces published in major publications like the New York Times and Huffington Post and River Teeth, you name it, they've been published there. So if you are wanting some accountability and a real chance to get your writing out into the world, that class is an awesome class. I keep it small and intimate because every single person gets feedback on their writing from me and the rest of the group. So if you want to snag your spot, you'll definitely want to sign up soon. That link is also in the show notes. As with everything, you can find it all on my website at NadineKennyJohnstone.com. So let's dive into today's episode. Oh, friends. Today is one of my favorite kind of days for recording because not only do I get to be here with my dear producer, Michelle Rado, but I also get to talk about my favorite moments of 2025. It is a great joy of mine to kind of go over and reflect on the year that was. And it makes me really delighted to think about these fabulous conversations that I got to have with people I've been admiring for years and years and years. And 2025, my friends, was pretty darn wild in terms of the caliber of guests that we had on. You'll see what I mean when we get into it. But we are going to chat about the best moments that were. And to join me, as I said, is my dear friend, Michelle. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Nadine. How are you? I love turning the mic on every now and then and getting my chance to say hello and be part of the show. So yeah, very exciting. So much good stuff to listen to today.
Yeah. As we were going over the clips to prepare for this, I was just in awe of the wisdom that these guests had to share. And it was really cool to reflect back and think about what did I learn from all of these women, but also what drew me to them in the first place. It kind of tells me a little something about myself and the personal journey that I'm on when I look back and think about why did I ask this round of guests to come on and why am I drawn to their particular stories? Mm-hmm. And so I think as we'll see in the conversation that I noticed that all of these women are women who are really, really authentic. These women are incredibly honest. They have gotten the courage to speak up about really important things and really personal things. And I felt deeply magnetized towards that as I myself try year after year after year to really be in my integrity and to be braver and braver to write from a place of deep honesty and authenticity. So that's why I was drawn to these incredible women.
Yeah. And, you know, I also will say with a producer's hat on, one thing that I always love is obviously I've listened and produced these episodes along with you through the year. So there's sort of reviewing them and going, oh yeah, that was interesting or this. But then there's usually some other kind of synthesis of wisdom that comes from listening to them all together. Mm-hmm. It's like a new juxtaposition of something comes to the fore with what they have to say and with various themes. You've had a lot of interesting themes in your sabbatical year. So I was also noticing, oh, some of these things are aligning, and it was really fun to see that come out. So,
Yeah. Well, since we have lots of fabulous moments to go over, let's dive right in. The order that this conversation is going in is not like choosing one favorite child over the other. So all of these women are number one in my book. But when I sat down to think about someone who has really changed me profoundly from both a personal and writerly lens this year, it was bestselling author Catherine Newman. Catherine has had quite the last couple of years. She has written several memoirs, and then her novel Sandwich just took the world by storm a couple summers ago. And then Wreck came out this year, became an instant New York Times bestseller, was the Good Morning America November book pick. I mean, Catherine has been doing it up this year, and I'm so happy for her well-deserved success. But more than any of those kind of accolades or titles, I think the reason why I was so drawn to have her on the show is because when I read her writing, I see such honesty and the juxtaposition of anxiety and beauty that I so identify with. I move through the world as someone who has a lot of fear and a lot of deep reverence for the magic of the world. And so to be able to read characters on the page who are very relatable felt so compelling to me. So when I read Sandwich, I was like, oh my gosh, this protagonist, Rocky, is living my same life. She's in the middle of things. She's got, you know, these kids and then the parents who are aging, and she's kind of in all of it. She's dealing with midlife, perimenopause stuff, and she has lots of anxiety and also sees the world with the kind of glasses that most people don't, like just a clear understanding of the miracle that people are. Mm. And so I thought, oh my gosh, if Catherine Newman is anything like Rocky, the main character, then I need to get to know her. And so Catherine came on and she was an absolute delight. We were laughing so hard in this episode.
It felt like you guys were old friends. It was really something. I was like, wow, I think they've known each other in a prior life or this one or something. Yeah.
Catherine came on. She was delightful, so funny. But we really focused a lot of our conversation on holding the juxtaposition of fear and joy at the very same time. And this moment that you're about to listen to really kind of highlights exactly what we're talking about.
We get to move through the world as people who always see when someone has their heart in their hands. And that's a really lucky way to move through the world. Like, it means that we're oriented towards connecting with other people.
Yeah. I think that this saying of we get to move through the world as people who are oriented towards connection, it was like, exactly. That is the other side of seeing the world with anxiety. It is that. And the other personal reason that she's had a major impact on me is that reading both Sandwich and Wreck and seeing such humor on the page right next to heartache has really made me write so much more from a humorous lens. So I always say that if someone read any of my books previously, they would think I like never laughed a day in my life. And I have such laughter and sarcasm in my daily conversations with friends and family. And humor is a huge part of my everyday. And I rarely put it on the page. So this past year, as I've been writing so much more than I've written in many, many years, due to my sabbatical, I have been writing humor, and I've given myself permission to write about some deep anxiety that I haven't written about before. So it's been really, really permission granting.
That's really powerful. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Another tease for at some point in the future.
Yeah, some things we'll talk about in future episodes. So speaking of best-selling authors, another woman who has had quite the year is Jen Hatmaker. Her memoir, Awake, came out in September, and it was just named the number one memoir of 2025 by Amazon editors and number seven across all genres. Wow. Oprah listed her book as one of the 30 books that saved our sanity this year. It was featured on CBS Mornings and USA Today, and it was a finalist for two Goodreads Choice Award categories. I mean, holy moly.
You got a sneak preview of it and got to talk to her before it was released, which was very exciting.
Oh my gosh, yes. I got to talk to her right before she went into full book launch mode. She had just come back from what she calls Me Camp, kind of her summer camp time away.
Yeah. A great moment. Like, what a pivotal moment to be able to I remember thinking that was really special. It's like, oh, you get her like 1 minute before the curtain is pulled back.
Exactly. And I think the cool thing about that is because we read all of these awards and recognitions that she's gotten, but I loved that in that interview, she was very candid about how nervous she was. This was her most personal book, and she's written, I think, almost 14 books at this point. Her most personal, it was about the loss of her 26-year marriage, about her husband's infidelity, about the ways that, as she says, these are her words, she was kind of asleep at the wheel in some areas of her life in terms of financial knowledge and other things. And she had to learn how to live a whole new life. She had to learn how to take full autonomy over her life and her choices, and now is living her best life yet. But the book really captures the couple of years where she was not living her best life. She was at her lowest, and I really appreciated that Awake captured not only those hard moments, but also kind of all the moments that led up to that. So she said, she always says about it that she wanted to capture what built such a flimsy foundation. Like, what were the things that led to the marriage falling apart? Not just the husband's infidelity, but what are the pieces culturally, socially, gender dynamics that kind of led to this very shaky foundation? And she puts it all in Awake. And as soon as I got the copy of that memoir, I knew that it was going to be on those lists. Yeah. Because I was like, oh, wow, this goes deep. This is very, very layered. So Jen came on. It was a really cool conversation to see what was keeping her awake at night. She was like, she got to talk to us about what was making her very nervous. She said that this book was the book that made her lose more sleep than any other book she's ever written. And she talks about why. She also talks about some hard-hitting questions that she got from a reporter at the New York Times and how she handled that. I think the thing I loved most was that she tried to write a very complex, dimensional memoir in which no character was all good or all bad. There was a truth in everyone's actions and how all people's actions led to the events that unfolded. And in this clip, you'll hear her talk about that.
It's not interesting and it's not true to simply say, this person made these choices and ruined my life and checked out of the family, and I am a victim in it, and everybody be like sad and mad with me. That's not that interesting. And even if it is, it's not true and it's not how it goes.
I really appreciated that candor. You know, mm-hmm. I liked that she essentially called herself out on things and talked a lot in this episode about writing and her process for writing.
Oh, yeah.
Which I will say, go listen to the episode if you haven't heard it yet.
Yeah. So Jen talks about how the process for this book was different than any others. She talks about rules that she made for herself for writing, because she has 5 kids, an ex-husband, right, and multiple family members that are all living, and that she had to deal with the repercussions of whatever she put on the page. So how she made some rules to navigate that. Those were really interesting. And I think they overlap with a lot of the things that I teach in my women's writing community in Write Well, because dealing with real life characters is a real thing for people who write creative nonfiction.
Yeah.
So, and that must listen to.
Exactly. Yeah. This was the perfect exemplification of that particular and usually most interesting facet of writing memoir, I will say. That's what everybody always wants to go, but what about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And speaking of the writing process, the next person that I want to highlight is Molly Weisenberg, another best-selling author. She had written 2 memoirs previous to her most recent, which is called The Fixed Stars. And it is about how she was in a heterosexual marriage, and then a certain event happened that led her to explore other desires. And I won't spoil what happens in the book, but when I read The Fixed Stars, I was blown away by the writing, the honesty, but this one thing in particular, and I've talked with Molly about it, it is that I saw on the page the narrator bringing in her own line of questioning into the text. But one of the things I appreciated most about Molly's writing process was that because what she was writing about in her third book in some ways went against the life that she portrayed in the other two books and the life that she was living in the other two books, she anticipated not only the reader's questions, but she also wanted to capture her own line of self-questioning that was happening as she was writing. Like, what is the truth here? Mm. And what is my truth? And she says in the episode how important it can be to take whatever it is that we are fearful that the reader is going to think, and we just call it out on the page. And that was revelatory. I know it seems so simple, but it was revelatory. Mm. Because those were some of my favorite moments in the Fixed Stars, is when she would come in and do this different questioning. And that's actually what she's talking about in this very clip.
The voice in my head when I began writing that book was, people are going to believe that everything I've told them up to this point was a lie, that I was closeted. How can you write two full memoirs written from the life of a heterosexual woman to then write this like very queer book? And it was only through writing it and really writing about that fear, the way that that fear was putting pressure on me from the outside, but also the way that that fear was inside me. You know, what if everything I've known about myself was a lie? What if I've been closeted even to myself? Really allowing myself to write that fear and to find ways to transform that fear into language and into art, this thing that could live outside of me and that I could make sentences about, really helped me work with it.
I've since gotten to study under Molly, and she takes published models and she uses them as such great inspiration for prompts and for us to go deeper with our own writing. And it feels very meta because reading her work has helped me go deeper. And for her, reading other people's work has helped her writing go deeper. So it's like, in each person's writing, you can almost feel the layers of inspiration from the writers they admire to the writers that those writers admire to. And so you feel all of that steeped in someone's work, which is really powerful.
It is. It's like one of those mirrors in front of a mirror where the reflections of everything that happened has gone back and back and back and back. Yeah.
And it's even better than like typically when I'm in those mirrors or whatever, it's like I'm trying on a swimsuit. So I see like my own dimpled ass in like 100 fold. This is a much better mirror than that.
A mirror of the things we want to see.
Exactly. Oh, I mean, I love my dimpled behind, but you know, this is a little bit better.
I won't even go down a rabbit hole on that one, Nadine.
Oh, I love it. Well, and speaking of laughter, Molly's episode was funny too. We laughed a lot. We ended up talking about midlife and many other things. So definitely go listen. Okay. Next up.
Kind of about living. I think everything about writing is also about living, which don't you think is kind of a theme?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I mean, this podcast, it's called Heart of the Story because it really is both of those things. It's story, it's the writing, but it's also the emotional layers that we live, the life that we live. And so every time I talk to writers, I feel like I'm simultaneously always talking to them about writing and living. Mm-hmm. And that was no different than with our next guest, Nick Antoinette. Talk about someone who is so clear in intentional living. So Nick was a long distance hiker for many, many years and still hikes, but has decided no longer to do running via their most recent newsletter. And also is someone who I've been following forever because their newsletters are super, super honest. And I stumbled upon Nick because Nick was hosting these newsletters called Wild Letters, in which it was totally openly talked about money and personal choices. And I really was inspired by the fact that anyone could talk so openly about how much money they made, where they spent their money, what they would or would not spend it on, how they would invest or not invest, what was a good enough number, and what number was just chasing money for no good reason than to follow capitalist culture. And I thought, holy cow, I love that honesty. And so Nick came on and we ended up talking about how to tune in to our own bodies to get deep clarity on what, how we feel, what we need, what we want. And because Nick is such a decisive person who will just decide to do things like, I'm getting off of Instagram, even though the bulk of my followers are there. I'm stopping my Patreon community, even though I'm going to lose tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, Nick is a person who makes the decision and deals with the ramifications because they are very value aligned. And so I wanted to know, what does that decision-making process look like? And something Nick said shocked me into relief. And it's this very clip.
The real sort of fork in the road that changed my life was realizing that I can be honest with myself about something and not take a single action.
That is kind of a revolutionary idea. And I thought the very same thing too. And it's funny because you talk about clarity and choice. And what this clip also tells me is the consideration process that's going on behind the scenes until you are ready to declare. You know, so there's, I'm thinking about something. I don't have to do anything, you know, so the action, when it happens, then you get more of a sense that there was something behind it, you know, that it was not just whimsical or reactionary.
Yeah. Or impulsive.
Exactly.
What blew my mind about that very simple statement was I realized that the fact that I put pressure on myself to take action is the very thing that stops me from telling myself the truth. And so I was like, holy cow. I know things in the back of my brain that are hard truths, but because I feel like, oh, well, I don't know what to do about that, I just will shove it back there. I'm just going to keep shoving it and shoving it. And we know that's not good. We know that doesn't amount to anything good. When I talked to Nick, I realized that I wanted to add something else to my journaling questioning that I do. And that is, what is the truth you would tell yourself if you didn't have to do anything about it? And I was like, whoa, that question always leads to really profound things. And when I write it on the page, I always kind of take a moment and I breathe and I sigh and I'm like, yeah, that's true. And then I let myself not do anything about it. Eventually, often something does happen, but at least I can be with myself and I can envelop my truths fully rather than trying to shove them somewhere that I can't see them.
Very powerful.
Yeah. And Nick provides a whole host of other clarifying questions in that episode It's one you like want to take notes on. So I loved my conversation with Nick Antoinette. So next up, I chatted with Tia Levings. Talk about another truth teller. Her book is called The Well-Trained Wife. It is about being in Christian patriarchy and escaping from a very oppressive community and relationship and really running for one's life and having to protect herself and her children. With Tia, the thing that really inspired me is that at one point in her life, she was in such an oppressed place, did not have a voice at all, like as a human, as a woman, as a wife, as a mother. There were so many layers of oppression. So I was so curious about how she went from that to author who has written a memoir, is telling their truth on the very public stage, and is not shaking in her boots. Like, she is claiming her story. And I wanted to know how she got there. And in this very clip, she talks about it.
It took me almost 10 years to write. And then it was a novel for a little while. And then it was a memoir with a pseudonym. And then I got to a place in my own healing where I was like, no, this is my memoir in my name.
Powerful. Once again, you know, it's funny because you say, you know, she'd be quaking. I think she probably was quaking in her boots for quite some time, you know.
Yeah, for quite a while.
So I love seeing the, you know what, it took a long time. And I am giving myself permission to do this whatever way I need to do this. And I can change my mind. And I love, of course, that she landed on, no, it's my memoir, it's my name. And there's a real like landing with that.
Yeah. She has become someone who has this groundedness and steadiness. And I know that she is writing about somatic experiences and really healing on a deep, deep level. And I can see it in my conversation with her. There is this steadiness of someone who's owning their story. And so to know that it took time and that she had these different layers of permission giving of like, okay, I can write this, but if it's a novel, it feels safer and I can write it. But if it's a pseudonym, and each permission layer kind of allows for, okay, if I tell myself it's going to be a novel, then I can at least get the story on the page. And then maybe I'll do something else and I'll be able to claim it as a memoir. But I use the same tactic when I'm teaching women writers who are writing nonfiction that feels very, very emotional or even sometimes traumatic, is that oftentimes we might start off with using third person or second person. So it's like, okay, she did this, or second person, you did this. There becomes a distance where it's like, oh, I'm not even writing about myself. I'm just writing about this other character. And it unlocks the story so that it can at least get on the page. And whether or not people decide to publish the story as fiction or to use a pseudonym or ultimately to claim it as their memoir, it doesn't matter, because I think what I care most about is women getting their stories on the page. What good is it if you go, no, I'll only claim it as my true story, but you're so scared by it that you don't actually put it on the page? Well, then what's the point? You know,
that's why you're such a good teacher. You're so encouraging. And, you know, you're like, you really want it to be out, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a slow process. And you are such a good hand holder on the way, I will say, from personal experience.
Well, thank you, my friend. So someone who held my hand a little bit going into territory that I didn't realize I was going to go into is Laura Carney.
Yeah, I was looking at what's coming up in this. What an interesting story.
Yeah.
I'll let you talk it up, but yeah.
So Laura's dad passed away when she was a young adult, and she decided to take his bucket list and make it her own, essentially. She made it her mission to complete the items on her father's list, which is
what her book is all about. And it led her to do some really powerful things and some really teeny tiny things, like everything from growing a watermelon to running many, many miles to writing a letter to the Pope. I mean, all of these very interesting things. But what really captivated me within our conversation is how openly she talked about her communication with her father posthumously. So Laura has been very open about the times where she felt his presence, where she heard his voice, where she felt messages from him. And of course, I was so interested in this because I lost my father in 2021. He was 57 years old. It was very unexpected. He got diagnosed with cancer and was gone a year later. And so after he died, I shockingly had moments of really feeling his presence and really feeling his words and really starting to understand him in ways that I did not even understand him when he was alive. And our relationship was one that was complicated by divorce. And so, you know, I didn't get to see him as much. And so we both bonded on losing our fathers unexpectedly, about really trying to understand them and get to know them deeper and deeper, even after they were gone, and the ways that we feel they're communicating with us. This conversation went to a whole different level.
You know, when we're talking about how do you grieve for someone you feel like you didn't totally know, you just have to pick up those pieces and figure it out, like figure out what you did know, what is real, what doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was fascinating as well. And this whole idea of a posthumous relationship with someone popped up in a few different places for me. I think that this conversation you had with Laura Carney might have been the first time it popped up for me, but I also spoke with someone on my podcast, Daring to Tell. Mm-hmm. Her name is Syra Sweet Dimitru, and she had a very, I want to even say, robust relationship with her brother after his death. Mm-hmm. And so this was a really new idea for me, and it's kind of popped up again and again. And yeah, and you saying that this has happened with you, I think it's really an interesting thing. Anyways, I just wanted to make note of that, and what an interesting creative way to get to know someone by fulfilling the things that they never did. I mean, mm-hmm. That's a big definition of love right there, if you ask me. So,
Yeah. And our conversation inspired me to dive through old pictures and videos. And in my office, the closet has a ton of my father's things. And Gio even has some of his like military clothes from when he was in the military. It kind of sent me on this discovery journey, I would say. Thanks to Laura, I really started trying to dive deeper and deeper and deeper. And even my dear cousin John, who listens to every single episode and has been such a beautiful person and has been checking in on me ever since my father's passing, and of course, even before then, but our relationship has deepened and deepened. And he and his family live in Ireland, where my family's from. And this journey has prompted me to look into Irish citizenship because my grandmother was a citizen. And so Laura's conversation has really prompted a deep dive.
Yeah.
And speaking of journeys, far and near, I had the best conversation with Trish Leach. Trish is someone that I'd been following for years online because she and her family have had a life on the road. They've traveled all over the US and in other countries via RV. And
she and her family have documented it all on YouTube. And for the past 5.5 years, we have been watching Keep Your Daydream, their channel. We've been watching it regularly. And I'm always in awe over not only the family, but Trish in particular, because in addition to raising their 3 kids on the road, she has also written and published 2 cookbooks.
Yeah.
Just like, how do you even do this? And when her latest cookbook came out called Taste of the States, I so badly wanted to talk to her. So she came on the show. And what really surprised me about our conversation is beyond, you know, talking about cookbook stuff and everything, I realized that she and her husband, Mark, have a very intentional way of spending their energy and living their life. So I was fascinated by how many dreams they've been able to accomplish. And it's no accident, because as Trish revealed in our conversation, she has very particular morning routines and ways that she looks at her energetic magnitude and capability and how she's going to spend her energy. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
you've got this locked down, right?
She's very intentional. And yeah, exactly. It's funny because she outlines it in a very strategic way, I guess, you know, an intentional way, because she's so aware of it. And it made me think, oh, that's not entirely dissimilar from me, but I guess I kind of took it innately, but she takes it to a whole other level.
Yeah. And this clip that we're about to listen to, she touches on that.
We have cardiovascular health. We have muscular health. Okay, well, how about decision health?
That should be the name of like a class, decision health, don't you think? As someone who changes her mind quite frequently, like, okay, I think I'm going to do this. Unless maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. What should I do? Maybe I'll do the exact opposite thing. I don't know. Oh, well, no, I probably should do what I went to do. But what if I really don't? You know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had never thought about decision health ever.
Yeah. What a concept.
Yeah. And she was saying how we need to strengthen that decision-making muscle, and that the hardest part of realizing a dream is not dreaming up the dream, it's deciding on the date to actually take action.
Yeah.
And so she and Mark are very, very intentional about deciding and doing, deciding and doing, deciding and doing. And she says how once you strengthen that muscle, then it makes it easier next time you want to try something or do something, because you're already used to like, okay, I'm going to try. And if it doesn't work out, then we learn from that and we move on. I left the conversation with her feeling so buzzy with inspiration. And that was just one of the many tips that she shared. Listening to her will make anyone want to go like, do the thing that they've been wanting to do, whether for some people it's getting out on the road, or other people it's, you know, attempting to write that story or taking on a new creative endeavor or whatever. But if you're looking for like a shot of inspirational adrenaline, listen to Trish's episode.
Passion is part of the equation in some of these decision-making things.
Yeah. Nisha Melvani was one of our encore episodes. And because I had taken a sabbatical this year, I was doing less podcasting than in years prior. And so we decided to bring on some of our favorites from all 5 years of Heart of the Story. And Nisha's was one of the encores that we brought back, because the inspiration that she gave was tied into her personal story of deciding in the midst of having kids, raising kids, to go to culinary school. And I'm always impressed when people in midlife-ish time decide to pivot or try something new or learn something new. And in many ways, she and Trish have that in common. Like Trish, who we just talked about, she studied at Le Cordon Bleu, which is a very, very famous cooking school in France, for 6 weeks this year. She was just like, oh, I'm going to try it. And then when I talked to Nisha Melvani was like, oh yeah, I decided to go to culinary school. And it really has changed everything. She's built not only this beautiful brand for herself, but her cookbook is called Practically Vegan. And the thing that I love about it is that she's never saying that everyone should go all 100% in on any particular dietary lifestyle. She's always just saying, what if you added a little bit of this or a little bit of that, or did less of this or more of that. So Practically Vegan shows practical ways to incorporate more vegetables, period. And so I also took that away from her conversation that we as humans don't have to go all in on any one thing. We can just try to incorporate a little bit more of whatever it is that's better for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that always feels like such a relief, doesn't it?
It really does. It's like, oh, be gentle with yourself, I feel like, is the takeaway for that one, which is always a good one for me.
Yeah. And as I looked into what she's doing now, she has really gotten into dietary lifestyle for longevity and how we can use what we eat to give us a long, long, healthy life. And so I've loved the pivots that she has made along the way. So I feel inspired by her, not only as a person, as a writer, but also as an entrepreneur out in the world. So this conversation was a good one.
I really get excited to make these dishes and create things. It's really a passion that I would probably just do anyway.
Yeah, that's the definition of passion, I think. It's like, I'm going to do this anyways. I just love it. I mean, sometimes if you get paid on top of it, well, that's a bonus, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things I was teaching a masterclass to my women's writing community, and we were talking about authentically building a platform. And one of the things I've said for years and years and will continue to say that talking enthusiastically about your work, your writing, your teaching, whatever it is, will feel joyous and not like an ugh, so long as you are tapping into what you love. And so if you're doing what you love, if you're talking about the things that you love, it's going to feel much more fluid and much more authentic than any kind of forced sale. So you can tell with Nisha that she cooks dishes that she loves. She writes the kind of recipes that she would serve to her own family. In fact, she talked about that on the episode, how her family has inspired it. And she really promotes the things that she already is into and does for her own self.
Some people's passion include finishing something really challenging.
Oh my gosh.
And because that makes me think of who we're going to feature next, which is a longtime student of yours and who I have worked with as well, Betsy Armstrong.
Oh, Betsy. Betsy is the absolute best. She is just joy. She just emanates joy and light. And she has such a powerful story of adopting her two children. And she was working on her memoir for a while. And I was so honored to coach her and review her manuscript with her. And I knew just from what she was writing about in her book, which is her endurance, essentially, because she wrote about not only her adoption journey, but also the long distance runs that she would do. She did many, many marathons, and running was a big, big part of her life. She really came across as someone who had great endurance. And endurance is something that you need for the writing process.
Yes.
Writing takes a long time. There's the drafting, there's the editing, there are the revisions, there's the approaching publishers, there's the publication journey itself, and it is a long road. So when Betsy's beautiful book, The Mother of All Decisions, came out after years of hard work, I was absolutely thrilled to see it on bookstore shelves. And Betsy really represents what it is to be doggedly persistent and to get one's work out into the world. And in addition to getting it on bookstore shelves, she also got it into listeners' earbuds thanks to your help of helping her produce an audiobook, which, listeners, if you don't know, that's the whole other half of what Michelle does, is that she is an audiobook producer. So really incredible.
Yes. Endurance is part of what I think of when Betsy and I work together to record her audiobook. Oh my God. She is, you know, it's a lot to read your book out loud once you've written it and then to sit there and read. And it's physically challenging and it's emotionally challenging. And she is a dedicated person to doing this. And there were a few times I'd be like, all right, do you want to take a break? What do you think? We done for the day? Nope. Let's keep going. I had to keep up. She was fantastic. And what a beautiful book. I am so, so honored and pleased to have worked with her on it. I really encourage you to listen to it because it is a beautiful listen. She did such a fabulous job reading it, and I'm very, very proud.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit of her talking about the process.
Sometimes angels appear, right? But I also think you have to look for your angel and actively seek them out or find the tools that are going to get you where you want to go.
That is so true with not only life, but with the writing process. So I told Betsy at one point, she asked me if she should go and get an MFA in creative writing. And I said, Betsy, you have an honorary MFA because you have taken more writing classes than anyone I know. Yeah. So she seeks out her angels, aka mentors. She knows not to go it alone, and none of us should as writers. So she is someone who walks the talk. She always seeks out help and support.
Yeah. The number of things she's done too sort of blows me away. She won a bodybuilding contest. All right, she came in second, please. And she has a pilot's license. I mean, she's an incredible human. Her book is really something. You must check it out.
Yes, yes. And another person that I coached for many, many years, Tamara Belinfanti, was another Encore episode that we had. And it was an early, early one. I think it was like number seven or something.
Yeah, it was like a single digit. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she was the first person I interviewed. I had been doing mostly just reading some of my own essays on the podcast. And then I wanted to chat with other people. And so I asked Tamara if she wanted to come on. And the reason I chose her and asked her was because I know that it's so difficult when you look at a book that's on a bookstore shelf and you go, how the heck do I get there when all I have right now is a tiny idea? I don't even have an idea. I have like a seed of an idea. How do I get there? And so Tamara was talking about from seed to story, what the process looks like of going from one little thing to the next to the next. And it's particularly helpful to hear from her because she is a law professor in New York City. She has three kids. She has a busy, busy life. And so I thought, what better person to speak to listeners about really taking a little tiny idea and making it into something than a busy working woman with a whole other full-time career? And in this chat, we talked about our many years of coaching and the things that have really helped Tamara along the way get words on the page and make the time for the writing and prioritize it. So that's what this clip is about.
So in terms of process, the next thing that we did was to line up all of these ideas. And you said to me, which one's calling to you the most?
Yeah.
And my initial response was, I don't know. And you're like, no, I think you know which one's calling to you the most. And
the idea that I ended up going with, I was like, this is the one that's calling to me the most. I don't know why. And the minute I said, I don't know why, you said, it doesn't matter if you don't know why, right? Mm-hmm. Just follow your heart and follow the energy, which I think is one of the best things ever you could have said, which is just follow the energy.
That follow the energy. I agree, Nadine. What great advice, because I that's another thing I feel like I've come to more recently is it's all about the energy, everything. Mm-hmm. And you just have to kind of go with the flow of it, because you can be in the flow of it or you can not be in the flow of it. And that's not a place any of us should be, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah, like listen to what is happening and tap into it.
Yeah. With both of my books that I've written, I did not write them in order. And every scene that I wrote, I knew which scenes likely needed to go in there or should be in there. But every scene that I wrote was one that morning was the one that was calling to me the most. Mm-hmm. And later I figured out the order that it needed to go in. But this is a piece of advice I give to all the writers that I coach and teach, which is pay attention to what you're paying attention to. Pay attention to what wants to be written today, because if it has energy, it's going to flow so much more seamlessly. And Tamara did this. I mean, she did this. And when we first got together, she said she had no creative writing, that it was all law stuff. And she's like, I might have one little poem. And she sent me some of the pieces that she had written that were not law things. And I could feel the energy specifically with one of them, which eventually was part of the content of her memoir. And since that time, she's written two whole books. She has written an essay that got published in Vogue, another one for Architectural Digest. I mean, like, she is incredible. And it just goes to show that if you just follow the energy, mm. next, it can become something. And you'll have to listen to it to see also how she makes time for writing. Because if you're someone who's busy and you're like, but I have no time for writing, trust me, Tamara doesn't either. But she talks about how she makes the time. So
she
you'll have to listen to it.
Every minute for what it is worth. That blew me away when she said some of the things she does to like write in these next 3 minutes. Like, boy, again, talk about dedication.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Speaking of dedication, and also someone who's really dedicated to literary citizenship, we brought back an encore with Faith Ettielli, who is, not only an incredible writer, she was Thailand's first Black Buddhist nun, and she wrote a memoir about that. She's written several books, in fact, but she is also known as being kind of the queen of the writing residency. She has gotten so many residencies and fellowships in amazing places all over the world, and she teaches about how to apply for and get those residencies and fellowships so that you could essentially write for free in incredible places. It's like, I'm like, oh my God, Faith, you are living the life. And she is very generous with her wisdom and her time. And this is not only generosity from a teacher's perspective, but she really takes seriously what she calls literary citizenship.
Travel writing is so important because it shapes what we know of the world. And if it's all the same people saying it, then we're learning very little about the world. So you really have a responsibility to broaden that definition and those voices. Mm-hmm.
I really love the way she thinks about that.
Yeah. This whole idea of like our responsibility and diversity of voices, those are some of her deep values and missions. And so she not only wants all experiences represented in the world, but she also wants everyone to have a chance at these writing residencies and fellowships as well. And so she really, really is a literary citizen. When I came away from the initial conversation with her, she has since taught a masterclass for my Write Well Women's community of writers. But when I first came away from the initial conversation, I really thought about that. I took it seriously of like, what is my duty as a literary citizen? And of course, it's embedded in my work. Like my mission in life as a professional is to raise women's voices. Hands down, I know it. It's clear. It's true. This is all I ever want is for women to get their stories down on the page, have their voice heard. But it made me think about how else am I engaging as a literary citizen? Like how can I promote other people's voices, say on this podcast? Yeah. What can I do to lift as many people up as possible and to be in community with as many other writers as possible and to collaborate with other writers? It's a really beautiful question for all of us to hold in our hearts if we consider ourselves literary citizens. One more kind of artistic citizen was an encore that we brought on this year, and that is Flora Bolley. She is an intuitive painter and artist, and she leads women's retreats all over the world. I've taken one, and I this year actually helped out at one of her retreats just as an assistant. Her retreats are titled The Art of Aliveness. Like, what? Of course, yeah. We want to be right. Just as alive as possible. And I really, really love talking to Flora because she always parallels the creative process with the life that we live. So whenever you're in one of her workshops or you're talking to her, you see how she's like, okay, well, what's the next color that wants to be painted? And what's the next sketch that wants to be drawn? And what if you didn't know the end result of this painting and you could just be in the moment and listen to the music? And so you're like, oh, she's not just talking about painting. She's talking about how to live a life, a present, intentional life. Whenever I think about this, it helps me remember to be present. It helps me remember to have pleasure and enjoy music and food and art and words. And I just get really, really full whenever I talk to Flora. So here she is talking about the importance of art.
I think creativity is going to like save the world because we need to learn how to adapt. And so here's a vehicle to get more strong in those ways.
It doesn't get any bigger than that. And I couldn't agree with her more, honestly. It's like, if we can find ways to tap into creativity to help us out of some of these little dead ends we get ourselves into, I don't know, you know, to solve some of the big problems that we face in the world, we got to think differently. And what you were saying before made me think also about like going with the energy. So it's another way of energy flow, allowing yourself the permission to create in a new direction.
Yeah. And how important it is to keep creating, even if we're going through a hard time personally or worldwide. There's the famous story about the man who would sit in front of the White House when he was protesting the Vietnam War, and he would hold a candle every day, and people would say, why are you doing that? You're not going to change anyone's mind in there, you know? And he said, oh no, I don't do that to change their mind. I do it so that they don't change me. And it's kind of one of those
never
things.
Heard that before. Yeah.
I heard Glennon Doyle talk about that. And I just loved that image of like, I'm going to keep creating my art because it keeps me as me. It keeps all of the hardship of the world from consuming me and turning me into a shell of myself. And so I'm going to keep writing almost as resistance in many ways. So I think that ultimately, when I look at the beautiful conversations from this past year, they have turned me into a more honest writer, which I hope, you know, whenever the words that I've been writing this year will come out into the world, I hope that will be seen and feel true and real. But they've been behind the scenes really, really changing my writing process, making me a much more honest writer. And they have also been making me think about being in my integrity as a human too. So when I think about the bravery that all of these women have had in order to put really hard stories on the page, really truthful stories on the page, and then they're standing there owning it, mm-hmm. as readers everywhere are reading and having opinions about it, and they're still standing, it gives me courage and inspiration to be that brave and to be that true and to be that honest. So that's what I garnered from these women this year.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yay. Well, so my friends, if any of these episodes were ones that you missed initially, go back and listen. My goodness. Even if you have listened to them before, let me tell you, I just went back and listened to most of these in order to prep for this conversation. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was great wisdom that person said. That was really great wisdom. So listening multiple times is no bad thing.
There's always something else you get the second time around that you were like, I was thinking about something else, but now this other thing pops out. Yeah, I'm a big person for repeated listening.
Yeah. I will also ask that if you love this podcast, if there was an episode that was really meaningful, the biggest thing that you can do to help support us is to just share it with a friend. So if there's one that you're like, wow, this really changed me, or I think it would really help so-and-so, please just forward it to them. Send it to them. That's how word has gotten out about this show. But also, I'm going to make Michelle squeamish on air. I wanted to give a big, big thank you to my dear producer, Michelle. So listeners, what you all don't hear are the many, many starts and stops and mouth noises that Michelle completely cuts out so that the show will sound good. But then also what you don't see is our conversations every Monday where Michelle keeps me organized and accountable so that these episodes could actually get out to you, because otherwise I might just waffle in indecision until the end of time. And so Michelle really, truly is the reason why you have a show to listen to. So Michelle,
well, thank you. I don't know about that, but thank you. Thank you, Nadine. I very much appreciate that. We're all working on our decision health.
Yes, Trish would be so proud. Listeners, thank you, thank you, thank you to you for coming back every single time to listen. There would be no show, truly, truly, without the listeners. So we're so glad that you're here and that you keep coming back and that you share it with your friends. So thank you, my friends. Have wonderful holidays. And remember, everyone, every heart has a story and every story has a heart. See you next time.